Andrew Hickok, who will be whose presentation is entitled Promoting Comprehensive HIV Services for Black and Latino Young Men Who Have Sex with Men in the Detroit Metro Area. Andrew is the project director of the United for HIV Integration and Policy Project, part of the Sex Lab at the UM School of Public Health. He received his MPH in Health Behavior and Health Education with a Certificate in Global Health from the University of Michigan in 2011. Andrew's interests in structural factors impacting HIV risk began when he worked with a community-based HIV/AIDS organization in Bogota, Colombia.
Thank you. So the data that I'm presenting today comes from the United for HIV Integration Policy Project, which is part of the Sexuality and Health Lab, and in partnership with those four organizations across the top there. I have no conflicts to disclose or report. So just kind of to give a roadmap of where we're going to go today, I'm going to describe the process by which we selected and interviewed stakeholders for this community academic partnership project. We're going to identify some of the structural factors that our stakeholders said place Black and Latino Young MSM at higher risk for HIV infection in the Detroit metro area. And I'm going to describe some of the policy recommendations that we're setting forth that will benefit the health and well-being of Black and Latino Young MSM in the Detroit area. So just to give a little bit of context here, our project is focused on the Detroit metro area, which we're treating as the six counties around the city of Detroit, with the addition of Washtenaw County, which is where Ann Arbor and the University of Michigan are. But most of our data come from the city of Detroit proper, so just to give some context there, 80% of the city of Detroit is African American, with at least 5% of the population being Latino, and that does not count undocumented Latino immigrants. 20% of the population is between the ages of 18 to 29, which was our target age range for this project. At least one-third live under the poverty line, and the unemployment rate, depending on what source you use or what standards, is at least 15.3%. In terms of HIV, Detroit is the state's epicenter for the HIV epidemic, with 70% of all Michigan's cases in the Detroit metro area. 49% of Detroit's cases of HIV are among men who have sex with men, and you can see the prevalence rates there. We can see clearly that Black and Latino men who have sex with men carry the burden for HIV infection in the Detroit metro area. And finally, 16% of all Detroit metro area cases are in men who have sex with men between the ages of 20 to 29. And just to breeze through some methods here, this data comes from the qualitative portion of our study, which started with an interview guide development. We used a semi-structured interview guide that we started with a broad range of questions based on the theoretical framework that we set forth in the grant and for the basis of our project. Then we worked through many iterations with our research staff and our community partners. And after we piloted those interviews with our community partners, we modified and finalized the interview guide to then go live with stakeholders in the area. And the stakeholders that we interviewed came from a fairly large list of 91 individuals and organizations that work with Black, Latino, or LGBT youth, work with HIV prevention and care, do any sort of work in funding HIV or LGBT initiatives, and those that advocate for HIV and LGBT issues. Over the course of several months, we interviewed 50 stakeholders, and each interview lasted around 75 minutes. And as you can see over there, most of our interviews happened within the HIV/AIDS specific services and LGBT organizations in the medical field and in CBOs in the Detroit metro area. And after doing the qualitative data analysis, we came up with this quite long list of domains that were covered in the interviews, which I won't go through all of those. And then we also asked a question of our stakeholders as to what are the five most pressing issues for Black and Latino Young MSM. So what impacts their lives most, whether it's their general health and well-being, their daily lives, or their HIV risk. We kind of left that open-ended to the stakeholders. And by and large, the number one was economic disadvantage. And we see in our data and from working in the Detroit metro area, and everyone sees it, in many interactions, that economic disadvantage is not only a problem for these young men who have sex with men, but also agencies, businesses, families, anyone in the Detroit metro area. So it's pervasive throughout the city and throughout the metro area. And I'm just going to present one piece of that and how economic disadvantage impacts HIV service delivery and accessibility for these youth. So in terms of HIV services, we asked our stakeholders to describe the availability of these services available to youth, whether it was sexual health services, HIV testing, general clinic services, or anything like that. We kind of came up with two general camps. The first was some of the stakeholders said that there simply are not enough services available. There's not enough free clinics, there's not enough hospital access, not enough HIV prevention services, that simply that broad realm of services does not exist in the Detroit metro area. And the second camp had to do with the fact that these services are available and they do exist in the Detroit metro area, but they're simply not accessible. Whether they're not visible, we heard many counts of free clinics being just around the corner, but youth don't know about them. They don't know that the clinics are free. They don't know that even if they don't have insurance, they can get these services. And sometimes the clinics and medical care was not even advertised or publicized. Some of the services aren't welcoming, whether they're not welcoming to youth, to ethnic minority youth, to LGBT youth, they just didn't feel welcoming for the youth. So they didn't access them because they felt uncomfortable there. The youth may think that some of the services are irrelevant for them. They don't think that these services are for young people or for LGBT identified youth. And then also many issues of accessibility that have to do with cost and a number of other things. And under that accessibility, we also had kind of two different sides of that. So we saw on the youth side, the Black and Latino Young MSM side, difficulties in accessing these services. So it has to do with cost of services, lack of insurance, lack of transportation, which is a whole story in and of itself in the Detroit metro area. It's unreliable, it's inaccessible, it's even public transportation is often a huge cost for these youth. And we just kind of have a long list here that, once again, I won't go through for sake of time, all the way down to fear of immigration for some of our, that we heard from some of our Latino organizations. We have some youth that might be afraid that if they find out they're HIV positive, they may be deported, that their family would be in trouble for undocumented status, and just fears of discrimination, medical mistrust for physicians, for health departments, any number of things. And then on the other side, we also saw barriers to providing HIV services, whether from an AIDS service organization or a public health department or a hospital or any sort of clinic, which really circles around issues of funding, which pours over into staffing and overburden of the staff, which causes issues with sustainability of programs and keeping staff on board and just keeping agencies and programs afloat, which impacts the quality and the availability of services to provide to youth. I talked a little bit earlier about the visibility of resources, and then finally the difficulty in communicating with these youth, because often these youth may not have the same phone number for more than 2 weeks, or they're very transient. They may not even be at the same address for more than a week or a month or what have you. So focusing on the funding and resource allocation piece of this, many of you in the room know that programs and aid service organizations and CBOs and research projects are primarily grant-funded, whether it's private grants, state grants, federal grants. They're very time-limited with specific goals that agencies kind of have to fit their programs into to get funding, to pay staff, to provide services, and to keep their agency afloat. So they may be trying to fit their services into certain requirements. And their staff, they don't have enough money to pay staff, and they're kind of running all over, and their staff are being burnt out, which causes issues with the quality of the services and the quality of the programs that are offered to the community. Many of us know that political agendas, locally, nationally, statewide, often have an impact on funding. So the primary focus of need that we may see in the community of MSM in Detroit may not be the current agenda in the state or in the city, so that makes it difficult for funding. And we also know that funding streams are very limited in all over the place, but it's especially difficult in Michigan with HIV funding, as I'm sure it is elsewhere. So agencies, rather than working together on getting funding and providing services, are competing for the same funding streams, and trying to fit their services into all these different sorts of requirements and competing for funding so that they can provide these services rather than working together. So we may have organization A providing the same services as organization B when they could be providing different services and referring to each other and working together rather than butting heads just to kind of stay afloat and serve their population to the best of their abilities. So some of the recommendations that we had from our stakeholders, the primary one that I heard over and over again in the number of interviews that I did was to really encourage consolidation and interagency collaboration between all these different agencies so that the agencies can really work together to provide more efficient and comprehensive services to these youth so that rather than competing, that they are working together to mitigate HIV infections and to really work together. And so there were a lot of suggestions and recommendations around working requirements into grant proposals and applications for funding to require interagency collaboration so that it's more than just collaboration on paper, so the agencies are actually working together on the ground to increase the health of these youth. We saw a need to increase certain types of services, so peer-led programs, LGBT and youth-specific clinical services, so that these youth are comfortable walking into a clinic so they see people like them, because often the service providers don't look like them. They're older, white, male physicians, and they don't look like these youth. And so just being able to see youth like them, whether they're working as volunteers, as staff, or just promoting these services and saying, "Hey, I went here. It's a really great place, and you should check them out as well." We also heard some recommendations for some sort of centralized intake, because we see these youth going to this organization for STI testing, another organization for HIV screening, another organization for help with their resumes and trying to get jobs. They have to go all over the place, tell their stories over and over again, and that gets prohibitive and exhausting for these youth. So just kind of developing some sort of agency-wide network so that youth can go smoothly from one organization to another. Training providers on how to deal with LGBT-specific health issues and MSM health issues and racial and ethnic cultural sensitivity so that these youth can go to a provider and have all of their needs met, whether it's sexual health, mental health, anything, so that they're met where they are rather than trying to go from place to place and find someone they're comfortable with, which is often difficult for these youth. And not only training our current providers, but also training our future providers in schools of medicine and schools of nursing. And to go along with that, we've heard recommendations that it'd be really nice to create a guide that will point youth towards open and accepting services and providers in the Detroit metro area. So rather than making it a crapshoot and going to this clinic to see if they'll be friendly, they'll have a guide that will have reviews from other youth and organizations that say, well, this place is really friendly and they know how to deal with LGBT health issues and they're really open and accepting and really want to help you. And just to quickly go over some future directions for our project, we're taking policy recommendations for service provision like this, and we're putting them together to target them locally to the Detroit metro area and also disseminate them broadly so they can be relevant for other metro areas throughout the country. We plan on sharing our data through community meetings and social media outlets, and we've hired several youth interns at each of our community-based organizations that will be heavily involved in the data dissemination in many ways throughout the next 8 months. And just to say thank you to our funders, Mac AIDS Fund and the Ford Foundation, our community partners, the AIDS Partnership Michigan, HIV Resource Center, Ruth Ellis Center, Detroit Latinos, statussexy.com, and the Sexuality and Health Lab at the University of Michigan. Thank you.